Let's go.
Welcome to Micromobility, a podcast exploring the disruptive potential of small electric vehicles. We cover the best companies building these amazing new vehicles, as well as topics relevant to how they impact people, cities, and our planet. My name is Oliver Bruce, an investor in mobility and climate tech, and my co-host is Horace Dedieu, founder of Asimco.com and Micromobility Industries.
Hey team, Oliver here. This week, we are releasing another episode from the recent Micromobility Europe event. This one is the Shared Scooter CEO panel talking about the state of their businesses, which was a very popular session on Friday. Ben Hubbard from Zag Daily had the leaders from some of the top operators from all over the globe on stage. We had Henry Moisenak from Dot, who covers Europe, Thomas Martin from Timbisi, who cover Latin America, Sun Kim from Swing, who's covering South Korea and North Asia, and Jaideep Danoa from Phoenix in the Middle East. So, very global coverage and a lot of very interesting parallels between all of the operators. I really hope that you enjoy. I think Ben did an amazing job with this one.
Let's go.
Good morning, everyone. So, just a quick introduction. My name is Ben Hubbard. I'm the editor at Zag Daily. We are a global media publication focused exclusively on the new mobility, micro-mobility sector. So just as a quick kind of introduction of like who Zag is. What does Zag mean? It means a sharp change of direction, which is what we feel business needs to take if we're going to hit our sustainability targets. And the daily aspect is that we are producing exclusive news stories every day. So sector-wide updates, industry investigations, interviews, that sort of thing. So hopefully everyone's heads aren't feeling kind of sufficiently sore after last night. But yeah, so in terms of the panel, this is a global CEO operator panel. I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves, and maybe you could say maybe one sort of interesting fact about yourself. Actually about the company.
Hi, everyone. I'm Thomas. I'm the co-founder from Timbisi. Timbisi, the largest operator bike sharing in LATAM. We now run like 30,000 bikes in four different countries, being like 10,000 e-bikes on the fleet.
Hi, my name is Sun Kim, founder and CEO of Swing. We are the largest shared micro-mobility operator. We're operating roughly 100,000 e-scooters and e-bicycle only in South Korea. Yeah, that's funny. And also, we are, I would say, as far as I know, we're the only one micromobility startup who's making operating profit, like EBIT, positive for three consecutive years. So we can talk about
that. It's a pleasure to meet you, man. So we're both. We are together on this, on the profitability side.
Awesome, yeah.
There are a couple of other companies that have reached that milestone. So I won't say who it is, but you know who you are. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay, good morning. I'm Jaideep, co-founder, CEO of Phoenix. We are a vertically integrated electric transport platform in the Middle East in five countries. We offer a portfolio of products, shared scooters, subscription vehicles, and now a package delivery as well on EV fleet.
Hi, I'm Henry Moisenak. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Dot. We're actually a company based in Amsterdam. We operate about 60,000 vehicles in Europe and Israel, e-bikes and e-scooters.
Great. So the first topic I really wanted to get stuck into was regulation. So have cities gone too far on regulation? And what is the sweet spot that balances consumer interests with business interests as well? So I think it probably makes sense to start with you, Henri, given what's just happened in Paris. I hate the term ban because it's incorrect. It's a non-renewal. But how do you feel about regulations?
I actually, technically, it's a ban, to be clear. We are going to remove scooters at the end of August, and I think it's very sad for a lot of users and Parisians who didn't get the chance to express their point of view. But the it's not too bad because we are moving from a fleet of e-scooters and e-bikes to more e-bikes. So it's not, the business doesn't disappear. So I think Paris has been one of the leading cities in terms of regulation. Typically, many operators, including Dot, we are for regulation. I think it's really important as the space, the public space changes, to bring innovation, but also bring regulation around that so it's done. If it's not a benefit for the city, it should be stopped. What's sad for Paris, and we haven't seen that happen in any other city. We operate in 35 cities, and all the other cities, they're moving forward, doing more, longer permits, bigger fleets, better regulation. Paris is the only city that has gone set back. And it, maybe there's a bit of a political game there. And it would have been, it could have been better, yeah, I think.
Bit of an anomaly then. So Sam Kim, I'd like to go to you next because the regulations are slightly different out in South Korea.
Yeah, North Korea, not North Asia, sorry. South Korea and Japan. I forgot. I always think of my friends there. So anyway, so Japan and Korea, I think we are very one of the very few countries where we don't have a bidding process. So it's for me, it's very exotic to for municipalities or for the government to say you, like who and where, how many, like which vehicle to operate. Like it's like a, it really reminds of us like North Korea. It's like, no, like the government decides you, like how many, like who, who's going to operate. So that's really against the, like I would say, political sentiments in South Korea. It's quite ironic because of North Korea, like the government doesn't want to really, you know, get into the, that, get into too much of that detail. So we have freedom to like who and how many scooters or whatever the vehicles we want to operate.
But reverberations of what's happened in Paris, you are now feeling, is that right?
Yeah, I feel the same way because like Paris, like it's sadly enough, look, Paris was a kind of a benchmark for everybody. Hey, look at Paris, like they're the first city who really, you know, regulate the scooters and look at all the parking lots. And we were benchmarking, like not we, the municipalities were like looking at them and study about them. Like, and that, they were so much inspired by Paris and now like, they're like, oh, maybe we should ban it. So no. Like, I mean, we didn't get into any of it, get anything close to it. So let's maybe start the parking lot things and start, maybe bidding process. And then if it doesn't work, yeah, you may ban, but it's too early for us. So anyway, it really, really have a bad impact on our regulatory like actions.
JD, tell us about the Middle East.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion, government, you know, they have their own, I guess, process, objectives, etc., and of course, citizen interests. But from a business perspective, it introduces a lot of uncertainty because even Paris, which, you know, we thought was one of the most progressive cities, has now, you know, for different reasons, decided to suspend the service. And this uncertainty we've seen in the Middle East as well. You know, we don't know when we can launch in certain markets. Some are still closed. We don't know how fast we can grow. We don't know how big we can become. It's very difficult to create a business plan that has high confidence for investors and for management. It's a bit unfortunate. Like, I wish cities would, like, the crux, I think, of the issue is that there's no space for micromobility. And that's why citizens, motorists are affected, because it's getting in the way of pedestrians or cars and causing a nuisance. And that's the core of like what cities need to address first and foremost. Make space for micromobility because a lot of people can use it. There's a lot of utility that can come out of it. And then let the market forces kind of dictate it. So at Phoenix, you know, we've had to try to, you know, mitigate some of the regulatory risk and go into, you know, less regulated products like private subscription vehicles, you know, which don't have the same kind of quota restrictions, but are still serving consumers, and of course delivery services as well, as an example.
Slightly favorable, you know, you're more pro regulation as well out in Latin America. Is that right?
I'm not a pro regulation, but I think if you are using a public space, I cannot build a hospital in the middle of the street because it's good for people. I'm using a public space. So I think that's the difference. Like when you compare with like ride railing or different or other business, I'm completely in favor of no regulations. But if you are using a real estate to provide your service, it's not free. So something has to happen. And that's, I think, what in LATAM, they started with no regulation. So I'm going to take this piece of the sidewalk and I'm going to provide my service and do rentals over there. I cannot do this. So that's why they start to regulate. More than that, they just deploy thousands and thousands of devices, a lot of accidents, and 1 year later, they are out of the market. So of course, the cities that doesn't like this kind of industry or this kind of solution in the region. So that's a little bit what happened. So it's not pro or against regulation. I think that's public space. That's real estate. It's money for everyone. So why can I provide my service without paying or not having any kind of regulation on this? So that's a little bit what I do believe. And I think that's going to be also the future in the region.
So I want to move on to the topic of profitability. It seems to be a bit of a buzzword at the moment. We're moving out of the kind of hyper-growth phase to the markets consolidating. And I thought it'd be interesting to find out, you know, your strategies, these guys' strategies to their reaching profitability. So let's start with JD, because I feel like you've taken a diversified strategy. You touched on it a minute ago. So it seems like you're moving into the delivery phase. You see more opportunities there.
Well, my perspective, like micromobility actually is a super product, shared micromobility, not just because it can generate, you know, revenue and profits as a standalone business, but because of the resources that it unlocks for platforms. And we've seen this with some companies. It has this organic customer acquisition with no marketing spent. You get, you know, thousands, millions of consumers who are clustered in neighborhoods, and then you can cross-sell them to other products. It also has underutilized logistics capacity because of the, you know, the seasonality of the micromobility business, not just across the calendar year, but even intra-week seasonality, intra-day seasonality. And so that's what we're trying to harvest with our portfolio, which we go deeper in our existing markets, you know, sell other products to those same consumers and find other ways to use that logistics infrastructure, you know, for delivery use cases as an example, sweat the assets more and increase the lifetime value of those consumers. But I mean, we have to do it out of necessity as well, because, you know, we don't have the same regulatory acceptance that allows us to have, you know, the scale of fleet that, you know, some of the other operators here have. So it's kind of a byproduct of necessity, but also opportunity.
Dan, I think that, you know, do you feel like one of the main reasons why you've been been able to reach profitability is because there's been no cap on fleet sizes, or is it something else?
Yeah, there are, I would say, roughly three factors. I also want to hear about your story as well. But anyway, just to start mine, number one, like, you know, having no cap is a blessing, I would say, because you can have, you can never make money if you operate only 1,000 scooters in cities, in my opinion, because, you know, you need a, you know, warehouse, you need teams to support, and all the SG&As related, you will never make money. Maybe you can reach positive unit economics. But, you know, in Seoul only, we have 25,000 scooters in one city so that we can reach economies of scale so that we can, you know, by the way, the revenue per scooter is really low. Cities like Seoul or Tokyo, it's very, we have a lot of public transportation. So the demand for the scooter is actually lower than European cities or any other cities in the US, in America. So that's number one. And number two is, I would say, you know, look at me. I'm Asian, very light and nice people. So we really take a good care of our assets. So the scooters, you can last longer. Like, I would say this is nice the shooting people. Thing. I mean, yeah, I'm the good example. I mean, I'm the smallest. I'm the lightest. I mean, nice. Yeah, you guys are nice, but I would... anyways,
but so, we don't care.
And modest too, huh?
People really care nice. About the sharing. So, I mean, an interesting fact. Another thing is, you know, the car sharing business. It doesn't exist anymore in globally almost, because, you know, people don't care about the car, right? But other people's car. But in Japan and in Korea, like the number one and number two globally largest car sharing companies are there. So it really explains, you know, the sharing some assets, it makes sense in Korea with the people like Korea and Japan. And thirdly, another interesting fact is, you know, it's somewhat like Bird operating model. We adopted the franchise model. And you'd be surprised to come to Korea or Japan and you walk by the streets and you see all the names, but all the name of the shops, restaurants are all franchise. So it's franchise entrepreneurship is there. So there are millions of people, not millions, maybe hundreds or hundreds of thousands of people who want to do a scooter franchise. So, and by doing so, with a really relatively limited capital, we could reach 100,000 of vehicles.
Henri?
So for us, we've been very capital efficient since day one. We are laser focused on profitability and we never raise money like some of the other players. So I think it's really part of our DNA. We're not yet there. Our strategy is two legs. The first one is on operations. We are vertically integrated. We build our software for our own operations and leads to a lot of efficiencies. All the, for example, the operations team, the hardware team, the software team, we all sit together every Tuesday morning to go through all the issues and we iterate constantly like this. So we are so much better now than before. That gives us a very strong base to do a service that is reliable but also affordable. In Madrid, for example, we've launched pricing at 1.5 euro per ride, fixed. It removes the price anxiety for end users. And we profitability comes through mass market adoption. We not have 25,000 scooters in Madrid, but we won't have 25 million users in Madrid. And so for that, you have to provide an extremely reliable but extremely affordable service and operations and mass market adoption. That's the path.
If you're charging, I remember reporting on this, if you're charging fixed price per trip, so if someone takes, if someone just rides an e-scooter around for 2 hours, you're going to charge them exactly
the same. Yeah, so 99% of the trips in most cities is below 30 minutes. Right. Sometimes 22, some 25 minutes. So the 1.5 euro buys you 30 minutes. It removes the price anxiety. We don't have delivery riders on this, but the average consumer, my mom, your mom, that's good. What they want is when they get on a vehicle, not have to get this price anxiety, not discover a bill shock at the end. So that type of move, it's not just software. Behind the scenes, there's all the operations. So effectively, we are profitable on a 1.5 euro ride.
I think innovations with pricing, I mean, you've been quite innovative in with Tembici, but with your advertising model, which ties in with the regulatory side as well, because they seem to be in favor of that. Can you share a bit more about how you've generated profits?
Yeah. So, and I love the history that you have no write-offs and everyone cares about the devices. We are on the other side. We have to invest. We have to invest. But it's nice because, I mean, we have to invest a lot to keep those numbers really low and the KPIs really low. So nowadays, when we started the company, we lost like 10% of our fleet every month. Now we are losing 0.15%. So it's really low numbers, even if compared to Europe or US. But then it's not because people start to care about it, because we are investing in IoT, GPS. So a lot of solutions on the bike, on the device. What we did, so we look for the business and say, okay, what is the opportunity that I do have? Because in Latam, we don't have any subsidies. There is no public money in the systems, which is really good. It's private business model. So, okay, I have permissions from the city, but I do the investment, I do the capex, I have to return the investment, I have to operate, but I collect all the revenues. So when I look this, okay, you have the advertising piece. It's true, but it's less than 30%. But it's good. I mean, everyone wants to have their brand's exposure in a bike sharing system all over. I don't know why in Europe they don't use this kind of business model, because it's amazing. I mean, it makes no sense. You're paying, subsidizing or not using the whole potential of the asset. So that makes no sense. That one thing. The second thing on the B2C, we are on the opposite side, because we have to increase a lot the utilization. Every time I look, I have to say, how can I sell more? Our vehicles does 7 to 9 rides per day, an average during the year. And why is that? Because we start to understand who are our users. So we start with the commuters, peak hours, 8 a.m., 5 p.m. Then we start to see that lunchtime, no one was using or less utilization. We start to sell these slots to the couriers and pricing different for the couriers. Then on the weekends, there is a dynamic pricing for the people who are using to leisure. So we start to see, okay, if he's willing to pay more, he's not a commuter, or if he's to pay less because it's a courier, how can we price in according to that? So then increase the utilization, you make more money per on average, and then of course you have to control the whole OPEX with write-off, maintenance, and everything. So that's how we reach profitability in the company. It was really looking increasing utilization per vehicle. So it was not about a scale. It was like, if I have 30,000, I have to be profitable on the 30,000. Mm. And then doing this, diversifying the revenues, understanding the behavior of our customers, and of course, investing a lot on the OPEX and controlling the OPEX, the maintenance, the logistics, and everything.
I think dynamic pricing just isn't talked about enough in our industry. And you know, I think JD, you've been testing it as well. Just for the audience, the idea is that, you know, if there was a scooter 100 meters down the road, then you might charge that at £2 or €2, seems in Amsterdam. But you might charge it at €1.50 if it's a little bit further away, which means that the user is having to walk further, but they're helping the operations teams kind of help with their fleet rebalancing. So it's quite a useful technique, but we don't really talk about it enough. JD, can you just share a little bit about what you've been experimenting?
Yeah, a little similar to what TimBC is doing. We have geo and time-based pricing. So, you know, going after the recreational, less price-sensitive user in leisure locations on weekends, etc. The commuters by the metro stations, you know, they're much more functional users who are looking for value. And, you know, there's definitely a upside there, especially when you're in a fleet-constrained environment. Sometimes it's just, you know, is there a vehicle available? And you know, that's how you can, you know, increase the revenue per vehicle. It's been quite effective for us, I think. Probably 30% plus increase with those changes.
There we go. So yeah, moving on to the next topic around consolidation. So we are seeing funding drying up in the industry. I think that's fair to say. So it's becoming more challenging for operators to raise capital. It'd be good to understand, you know, are you guys looking at acquisitions or if you are you looking to raise capital? How are you finding that approach? So can we start with you, Henri?
Yeah, sure. So I think when the funding dries, it's typically harder for the ones who raised a lot in the past because you have to sustain typically bigger fleets, bigger people, bigger HQ and so on. We don't have that problem, at least at DOT. I think the fundamental story here is that investors could do yo-yo, but they all believe in the vision. Everybody sees a city where there's free of cars, more transportation. So you just have to survive on the way on the way there. And so not consuming too much capital, being capital efficient. And then on the way, there could be opportunities. We are looking at other products, other geographies, who knows? But fundamentally, we are focused on our organic growth.
Sam, I know you were chatting to me before it started. So do you want to share a little bit about what you were saying?
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I was for more venture capital, venture capitalist. So I kind of feel these days, you know, investors, they just want cheap money and a cheap valuation, you know, just whoever it is. Like, so the consolidation, you know, to be really honest with you, as a founder of a company, you don't want to consolidate with a competitor, right? Most of the cases, you want to cooperate. But the investors, they have a different agenda because they have, you know, this apple is going rotted, and you want to, you know, combine it and somehow make it, you know, survive together so that you can protect your IRR return IRR. So I see different forces of consolidation coming. So the investor driving the consolidation between the company who's going well and whose company is not going well, or not going well, and you put more money. So I heard, you know, I came here to meet my existing investors in Europe, and I'm trying to raise more capital in Europe, you know, which is not a right place to raise more money here.
How much are you looking to raise?
I'm looking to raise 50 billion Korean won. It's roughly 50 mil. It's my last one was 25, so it's modest money, but it's really, really difficult. So I'm proposed by my investors. Hey, why don't you combine with these guys? Then I will put this money. Why don't you combine with this guy? Then I will put this money. So that kind of that's really driving the consolidation. That's number one. But in my case, in South Korea, we're profitable, but we're looking, we're seeing the saturation of the shared micromobility market. Like I said, 100,000 in only one country, right? So we are looking to consolidate for expansion. So we're looking to acquire a ride-hailing company, for example, and chauffeur service business to really expand and grow. So there are like two factors, like who want to grow, they consolidate, or who are going bad. So so the investors are trying to, you know, marry them and somehow support them together.
Great. Thomas, any acquisitions on the cards?
If you go out of South Korea, I'm going to sell you the write-off solution for you, okay? Because then you're going to need it a little bit more here.
Yeah, that's good later. True.
But then I think when what we are looking, as I mentioned, because we have this diversified business model where you have like advertising, long-term agreements with sponsors, that allowed us to raise a lot of debt. So we just raised like $70 million in debt in the last 6 months to invest in CapEx. Because I think that one of the problems in the industries, and when you are when you're starting the company, you have to raise like equity for CapEx. And that's really challenging, painful for everyone. The investor doesn't like, the founders doesn't like, no one likes this. So you have tried to figure out how to be out of this. CapEx is one thing, it's expansion. Don't use equity for that. In our case, we start to use debit, and now I think it's a good moment. It's a good moment in this sense because there is a lot of ESG lines. So we just raised like $50 million with 12 years period and less than 4% per year. So really good line, attractive lines for this. But of course, because we do have these long-term agreements with sponsors, because we just proved the business model and then you can expand. So I think here, it's not about fundraising or not. I think there is, it's a little bit more challenge. And of course, you will have a lot of companies dying. But on the other side, I think the more important is, did you fix your business? Is your business really making money or not? And doesn't matter how, if it's scaling, if it's because you are doing well in the unit economics, but you have to have a really strong business model, especially in a CapEx intensive industry. It's not the same. And you have to realize that. So I think that's how we approach this.
JD?
I mean, look, the whole micromobility industry has gone through boom bust cycles. I started in China. I mean, Henri and I were both there. And, you know, so there's moments to thrive and the other moments to survive, right? Right now we're in the survival stage. And, you know, like the panelists were sharing, yeah, get your business in order, you know, that it's viable, it's sustaining. You know, you have to tweak things so that, you know, whether it's other revenue lines, other business lines, pricing, et cetera, so that it works. And then, you know, you'll continue. And those who can't, you know, won't survive. And it's just going to happen.
So I think we'll finish there. But does anyone have any questions? Burning questions they'd like to ask?
Sorry. No? I'm going to say no.
Maybe afterwards.
Yes, indeed. Come see them afterwards.
Cool.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.